Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Well, a question for you. How would you describe the time that we're living in? Would you describe it as wartime? You know, we here in Ireland don't have many soldiers going to war. Famine? No, our supermarkets are stocked up generally. A plague, but our hospitals are perhaps even quieter than normal. On a whole lot of levels, it is a very interesting time. And not least of all, from a philosophical perspective, I'm asking the question, what does this crisis say about us as a society? Well, with me now to discuss that question, I have philosopher and author Dr. Mark Dooley. Dr. Mark, you're very welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, I guess, first of all, how have you been getting on? How have things been for you?
Yes, they've been very well. Just listening to that wonderful song there that you were playing beforehand, you know, disguising the message of grace in the words of a secular title, you know. And so as long as we smuggle things like that out into the world, we'll be all right, I think.
Very, very, very astutely noticed. Well, I certainly personally have seen mention of this online, in articles, newspapers, of people kind of taking a step back, which we all did during lockdown, and taking a step back and examining sort of our reaction to what's going on, both collectively and on an individual basis. So this crisis and the way that we have responded to it, do you think that this has been a special opportunity to look at ourselves and see what does that say about us as a society?
Well, every society that has a crisis, no matter what it is firstly forced to ask questions about identity. You know, you mentioned the war there in your preamble. You know, I grew up in a household where the Second World War, and indeed the First World War, was still very much on the horizon. You know, it was there. My grandparents, with whom I spent a lot of my young life, constantly spoke about the sacrifices that they made and about the rations. They always going on about the rations, you know, to remind me how lucky I was to have sugar in my tea or whatever it might be. And so they knew about sacrifice, and they knew what sacrifice entailed. And sacrifice entailed, in the middle of a crisis, sacrificing for one another. You see, in our ordinary state of affairs, we go about our business not realizing that we are part of a we, the first person plural, rather. And when we say we, what does that mean? We the Irish, we the Europeans, we the Westerners, we knew what that meant when we were besieged by the Nazis. You know, we were those fighting in defense of democratic values and freedom. And we clubbed together to help our neighbors in so doing. So in this crisis, we are reminded of that again. And it's the older generation, you will notice, that are very acutely aware of this, you know, bonding together, helping one another, still making distance for each other on the path, you know, adhering to the rules. Now, I'm not saying all, but the majority. And it seems to me that, although listeners may disagree, that there's a large disconnect between that generation who recognizes that we club together and recognize who we are as a we, a disconnect between them and the younger generation who have no memory of sacrifice.
Yeah, and that's sort of disconnect. So you talk about that we. It's almost like that sense of identity of how do you define yourself, both as an individual and as a member of the group that you happen to be in or that you happen to view yourself in. Talking there about the difference between the older generation, you said would have more. Logistically, more life experience of sacrifice, and those of us perhaps my age who wouldn't. What characteristics do you think would be present? Would be different between those two demographics?
Well, in the first instance, you see, the thing is, you know, I keep emphasizing this. We are a product of the collective community, all of us that we come out of. Now, if I may be so personal as to say, your generation, my children's generation, well, I've a teenage son and a couple of younger ones, but people around from, let's say, 30 down, they assume, for all sorts of reasons, and it's because of globalization, it's because of technology and so on, they assume that they can choose their identity. that it's something that they can cherry pick. You know, we belong to groups online. We belong to, you know, social media groups, etc., etc. But of course, they are the product of a collective we that underpins everything they do, the general community out of which they come. And it seems to me that that whole notion is absent from their minds. So the notion that they might have to do something in order for the collective good to thrive in this crisis seems to be largely absent from their consciousness. Now, that's a tragic thing. It's also got to do with the fact that they are totally unaware of their history. You remember the debate last year about teaching history in schools. Mm. Even the president had to intervene. I think it was that intervention that forced the then Minister for Education, Joe McHugh, to insist that history be made compulsory or retained as a compulsory subject on the school curriculum. For the reason that we have to know about these episodes in the past, when we faced real crises. Now, I'm not saying this is not a crisis, but real crisis. When you compare it to World War I and World War II, when we tore ourselves apart and 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 million people were killed, we're doing rather okay. We're doing better than that. But still, it involves grouping together and saying, we will not allow any member of our community to go undefended. And even by just making room for them or wearing your mask or whatever it might be, that in itself is a small sacrifice and a worthy one.
Mm. Yeah, and from what you're kind of saying there, I would assume, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I would assume that you would imagine then that our great grandparents, perhaps my great grandparents, would be reacting differently to this crisis were they to be alive today.
They would, because I mean, they lived through the Spanish flu, of course. They lived through tuberculosis, and when the tough got going, they didn't get going. You know, they knuckled down and they reinforced their social solidarity, and they did what they could. You know these images of even the Queen of England going out and driving an ambulance during World War II to show. Not that wasn't just merely symbolic, it wasn't like, you know, a Tony Blair moment for the cameras. That was a sovereign, a potential sovereign at the time, going out and mucking in with the rest of the community of which she was a part, and showing that, you know, we are in this together. Togetherness. Now, you see, of course, no teenager and no 20-something or 30-something, has a right, it seems to me. And this is where the liberal mindset goes off the rails. No person of that generation has a right to say, we do not belong to that. We have no sense of settlement. We are free spirits. We, can disconnect from our past and disconnect from the social matrix out of which we emerge. No, you can't do that, because you are a product of that and you owe something to that. So our grandparents and our great-grandparents had that was in their bones, it was in their blood, that sense of togetherness and that sense of solidarity. So yes, to answer your question, they would have reacted differently.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing articles as well written on they're sort of decrying the fact that we seem to be increasingly becoming, quote unquote, a risk averse society. Now, obviously, with the great risk of COVID being presented to us now this year, do you think that's still the case? Would you agree with that assessment of our current kind of Western first world society, that we are risk averse?
Well, it's becoming more so. I mean, the reason that the West is distinct from the rest, let's put it that way, in historical terms, is because of risk. I mean, it requires risk to innovate, right? In terms of technological innovation, in terms of spiritual innovation, in terms of intellectual innovation, and we have done that always. You know, we've taken risks, and risk means that you may lose. You know, that's the thing. You may get hurt in the process.
It's the nature of risk.
You may invest everything you've got, and you may lose it all. But you do it because you may also win. And the great explorers did that, knowing that they possibly were going to lose everything and every man on board, but they did it nonetheless, and they are now in the history books. But we, as you can see again, and I go back, unfortunately, again, Mark, because you said it to your generation, it's a very off-putting phrase, and it's unfair, but you're often referred to as the snowflake generation, meaning that you crumple at any sign of worry or distress or any sign of danger or threat. That's not always true, and I take exception to it, but it has become a kind of a common cultural meme that goes around, mm-hmm. and can be ascribed to those who really are offended by everything, including COVID, as if this was done to them. And it wasn't just happenstance, may emerge that it was created by human hands. But for the time being, let's go on the assumption that it wasn't. So we don't get offended in situations like that. The appropriate response is responsibility. Take the risk for your neighbour. And take the risk for yourself. I mean, the nobility emerges, and one of the great characteristics of the human spirit is nobility. Nobility emerges when we go the extra mile for the other. Mm-hmm. That's what nobility is. You say somebody is noble because they lay down their lives. The great sacrifice of the cross that we were listening to in that song that you played. That's the great model for us. This is why the crucifix has been central to Western identity. Sacrifice. The sacrifice for others. The nobility of that sacrifice was not because a man was routinely condemned to death. It was because he chose to do it for others. And that is our model. And unfortunately, it's becoming less and less so.
Yeah, so we're looking at, and as you talk there, and of course, you're absolutely right that the supreme example of self-sacrifice as modelled by Christ. But it reminds me as well of an extract from a lecture I listened to quite a while back now from Professor Jordan B. Peterson, who obviously is very modelled on the Jungian school of thought. Mm-hmm. And he was referring to the idea of, you see a lot of discourse, particularly as I guess we're going to continue to refer to them as my generation, with along the lines of group rights. It's all about group rights, for whether they're marginalized groups or minority groups. But Peterson then talks about, well, with rights come responsibilities. It's either side of the scale. And to then have group responsibility, he said, is very difficult to enforce. And then you're relying then on this great phrase. You say, well, of course, the smallest minority you can get is the individual. So what you're talking about then is you're talking about the responsibility of the individual as a member of the wider body, and the service that is owed to the community, and at times the sacrifices that have to be made on a personal level. I was talking last night about the curtailing of personal freedoms, which, from a purely utilitarian standpoint, it doesn't make sense. If anyone's a logical, self-serving individual, they're not going to do that. But we do that because we're human and we don't exist in a vacuum. We exist in community. We're made for community. And we do have that systemic bias towards cooperation. And that really, that needs to be seen currently, I think. Is that, would you agree with that?
Well, I would, because you see, the thing about it is, there's this kind of idea that, amongst the younger generation, and it comes from the schools and universities primarily, and the universities in which I taught for 20 years, but so I know what goes on there. But the thing is that there's this kind of view that has emerged in the last 20, 25 years, that we are born in a vacuum. And that we suddenly, these kind of chains of rights start wrapping themselves around us from the moment we're born. Well, that's not the case. You're born, the chains of custom wrap themselves around you from the time that you are born, because you speak with an accent, you have a history, you have a story, you're born into a family, all of which surrounds you and models and molds you, and out of which you emerge. Now, the thing about responsibility is, it becomes, of course, from the root is response. You respond to that. You answer back those voices that speak through you, what Conor Cruise O'Brien once famously called ancestral voices, that speak through you when you speak. And you can't deny it. You can try and change your accent, sure. You can change your name. name even. But, you know, the thing about it is you will always have a story where you will say, I changed my name from that.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to refer back to it. And you respond to it in that way. And that implies a certain degree of duty. I usually say that duty, that rights begin where duty ends. You know, because otherwise you cannot function with other people. You know, because functioning with other people in a society, even if you don't see yourself as belonging to a community, you still have to negotiate your way around, involves compromise and negotiation. And therefore you have to give way. You can't barge in front of people, you know, in a queue. You can't storm through a traffic light. That's negotiation and compromise. You compromise for the other. So those are duties. And if you don't have them, there's catastrophe. So the rights only come in when duty ends. So I think we've got to reverse this idea and say the rights are a privilege that you gain and that you earn on the basis of duty and responsibility, and not until then.
No, well, very, very right. I think we are running close to our time there, but I just want to get one last little piece from you, because obviously we do exist in a time of a lot of kind of heightened anxiety and panic, and there are certainly a lot of negative things that can be said or can be taken from our current situation. But to flip the script a little bit, do you think that there are any positives that are coming or that could come from our current situation?
Yes, there most certainly are, and I think every crisis is a wake-up call to a society and to a community. And one of those, in this case, is to remind us of our fragility, to remind us that we are dependent beings, and that we are dependent on one another. And I think that's even beginning to dawn now on this generation, much maligned generation of yours, Mark, that we pummeled in this conversation. But it is beginning to dawn that we are dependent creatures and dependent upon one another, and on the values that we set on one another. And I think if we come out of that a little more cognizant of that fragility and that dependency, which I think we are, we'll be better human beings. This sense that we are superhuman, that we are ourselves alone and all of that, and that we march triumphantly by ourselves into the great new dawn, that has caused us nothing but grief. And it's a product of a generation that doesn't know anything about its home. You know, it's the culture of amnesia, I call it, you know, that's forgotten where it came from. So to remind us where we come from and who we belong to and what we owe them is the great lesson of this, I believe.
Oh, fantastic. Well, Dr. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time and for coming on to the show and talking to us today.
God bless you, Mark. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Take care and God bless. Well, there it was, Dr. Mark Dooley, author and philosopher. If you want to read or hear more from him, he does have a website. You can go and check out drmarkdooley.com.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.